It requires more than just your language skills. This session explores how cultural awareness shapes communication, negotiation, and leadership, and how to navigate those differences effectively in business. Our next speaker works across international environments, focusing on communication, leadership, and sales strategy that adapt to diverse cultural contexts. The topic is how to communicate, sell, and lead across cultures. Please give a warm welcome to Ibrahima Sek.
Good morning, everyone. It's an absolute pleasure to stand in front of you today and talking about cultural nuances and how these will influence the way you connect, understand people, especially for you as nomads, as you're working across borders. Let me introduce myself and give a little bit of context about myself. So my name is Ibrahima Sek, and I was born in a small country in West Africa called Senegal. And this is little me at the age of 3. Oh, yeah, I was cute back then. Nowadays, it's something else. However, my mom is from a small island called Cap Verde, which is west of Senegal. And she's as well half Portuguese. My dad is half French and half Senegalese, which means my childhood was very rich in terms of experience, but as well very confusing as a child, growing up across so many cultures. And to add to the whole confusion, at the age of 14, I moved to Germany. Yes, I know. And then I had, once again, to adapt, right, to a new culture. Then, in Germany, I started my corporate career at a small company that I might have heard of that sells sugary drinks in a can called Red Bull. And I really apologize for this picture. Back then I thought it was very cool not to look at the camera. I don't do that anymore. I started my job in sales, and my job took me as well overseas, to the UAE in particular, where I was responsible for Africa, Middle East, and Asia as an internal consultant for sales. Once again, understanding cultural nuances became as well very important, right? Which brings me to today, where after spending 10 years in the corporate world, I opened my own company where I'm covering nearly the whole of the globe with understanding cultural nuances and working on projects with all of those companies. So, and this is me today, a little bit different than the pictures you saw before. Culture, that will be the topic today. And when we talk about culture, if I look into the room, we have a very diverse audience. And when we think about culture, the first thing we think about is where people are actually from. But today I want to take your minds out of just thinking about borders and countries. Because culture is more than that. Culture, at its core, is just the common understanding within a community of what is deemed acceptable. In other words, the common understanding within a community of what is acceptable means, within a culture, what people expect or accept. And a community can be more than just a country. Let me give you some examples. The first thing we can look at, what a community can be, let's zoom out. If we think about the region that we're in right now, think about from the Middle East to Asia, it is expected from you, when you come into somebody's home, to take off your shoes, right? This is what the community has decided that is acceptable. So it goes beyond just the country. It is a whole region. But a community can be something else. It could be your hobby. Do we have anyone here who is a gamer? And I'm not talking, oh, that was quick. And I'm not talking about just Candy Crush on your phone, like real gamer. What is it that you play, sir?
Most AAA games, I have like 8 consoles.
What is one of the games you play online against other people?
If it's online,
you don't play online, okay. But as you are a gamer, if there are any other gamers here, you know the term GG.
Yeah.
And if you're a gamer, that means good game. Within a gaming community, it is acceptable, even expected, even if you win or lose, to say to the other one, good game. It is just the etiquette. If you're out of it, you might not know what it is. If you are a biker and you ride a motorcycle, it doesn't matter which country you're from. But if you face another biker, what you will do, you will give them a sign. Exactly. It is the community of bikers, it is the culture within the bikers, right? I want to give you another example. If we go beyond just that, I want you, oh, that was too quick. I want to give you an example of I want you to think about your friends group, and you have different friends group, especially as nomads, you're moving across countries. In your friend group that you have, if the bill comes out, do you fight over the bill, or does one person pay it? It is different for everyone. It doesn't matter where you're from. There are certain cultures where one person will pay, in other cultures, it is like we will separate the bill. So this is, goes beyond just the borders of a country. Culture is more than that, and we're going to deep dive into that. But there is a very important disclaimer here when we talk about culture, because culture as such will never tell you anything about the people. It will tell you what people are used to, which is a huge difference, because culture will not tell you how people are, but what they're used to. And I'm going to give you an example. If we're thinking about punctuality, what is one culture that comes to mind?
Now,
I accept that, Germans, yes. But here is a disclaimer. Not every German is on time. But everybody who lives in Germany knows that punctuality is highly valued, which is a huge difference. One is a stereotype, the other one is culture. Because if you think about stereotype, that's what you might think of a German. It might be offensive to some. I grew up in Germany. I asked. They said I'm allowed to do so. So therefore, one is a stereotype to say that Germans are always on time. But the truth, the cultural nuance is that punctuality is highly valued. These are huge things. So when we talk, it's not the Germans. It's Germany. Whatever you learn, Germans can be this or the other way. Within the confine of their culture, punctuality is highly valued. Very important. And if we talk about that, when we talk about personality, it depends who you are. But the difference between culture and personality is your personality will never affect your culture, but your culture might affect your personality. You could be an uncultured person that lives in Germany. You'll be miserable. Because you will have to be on time everywhere. But if you're somebody who kind of, I am punctual anyway, so you feel right at home. So your culture might impact your personality, but not the other way around. Therefore, we need to bear in mind that personality and culture are two different things. And therefore, let's take punctuality as an example, right? We get from very strict to very relaxed. And I will put some countries in there based on how they look in comparison to each other. One, we have on the left countries that I consider very strict in terms of time. Cultures, countries in the middle that might be a little bit more relaxed, and countries that are way more relaxed when it comes to time. But here, as I said, it's always a matter of perspective. If you will talk to someone in Germany, they'll tell you, oh, we are very punctual, obviously, that's what they would say. And if you move away to France, people in France might tell you, you know, the Germans are very strict, but it is not as bad as it might be in Brazil. People in Brazil will tell you, oh, in Germany is very strict, in France as well, but wait until you get to Morocco, right? At the end of the day, it's just a matter of perspective where you stand. You're not punctual or unpunctual, or strict and relaxed. You're just more or less than the other, from your point of view. Therefore, when it comes to culture, the first thing we need to learn, it's always a matter of perspective. And you have seen this picture before. It doesn't matter what you see, is it a duck or is it a rabbit? You're not right or wrong, it's just what you see. Because that's what you know, that's what you are used to due to the culture you grew up in. That's the very first point that I wanted to make before we dig deeper into this topic. Now, some of you might remember this movie, Inglourious Basterds. And I want to do a life test when it comes to that. Culture affects us in ways that we don't know. And we might be very surprised that other people do things differently than we do. What I would like you to do now is to count to three with your fingers and show them up. Please, count to three with your fingers and do that. Okay. I'm going to show you now what the differences have been. I've seen so many different things. Some people have started here and did this. Can you show me? Can you put your hand up if you did this? Oh, it's kind of nearly half the room started with the tongue. Some people started here. Who started here? You see? My finger cannot do that when I'm trying to do it. It could be very different. I saw some people who started with their pinky hand up. Exactly. Some people started like that. And everybody is so confused. Who would even do that? In the fact. Very confusing. And last but least, do we have any hands who counted backwards? Well, anyone? No. If you would be from Japan, for example, it can't really want to happen that you would count backwards. Confusing. But in your way, you could never think about somebody doing this, even if you count like that. Because that's how culture affects us without us knowing. Other people do different things than we do. And that's a very important rule that you need to bear in mind when you're dealing with cultures. People do think for a good reason. Now, I'm going to show you something that I've created that I call Connect. This will show you seven different ways in which you can compare cultures. But this would be, I will show you some countries on that line, and I will show you how they are different from each other. But I will always give you two examples. One, and why is that? And give you an example of a corporate environment, just to make it clear. First thing I want to start with is called control of power. And control of power means if within a culture it is accepted that there is a gap between the people in power and the people that are not. An example would be in the Netherlands, the prime minister will ride on a bike to go to work. It is expected because even the prime minister doesn't have a so high rank to the people that he serves. On the other hand, if you live in China, even if you are leading a team, coming with a car that might not be as fancy as the others might put your team at risk to be bullied. Because if you have a higher position, it's very important to show something. And then you have here, it is either egalitarian or a very strong hierarchy. I will put some countries there just as an example. And once again, it is not absolute, it's just in comparison to. If I put some countries in there, I will give you an example from the corporate world. I would like to isolate two countries, Sweden and Russia. Imagine two teams that are dealing with each other and there is a decision that needs to be made. In Sweden, they might think, let's add more people to find a solution because the more input you have, the better you might find an idea that you haven't thought of. In Russia, they might think, okay, let's make a decision because if we involve too many people, it will take too much time. None of the points are wrong, they're just different. And that is very important. Therefore, if you're in a corporate environment, what people are used to is maybe a decision made for them or a decision needs to involve them. Once again, it doesn't say nothing about Russians or Swedes. It's just what people might be used to in that culture. Second, orientation of time is a little bit more different than just punctuality. It means if time is more important than something else. And here, once again, we'll put some countries more linear or more flexible. Where it comes from is, for example, the more industry in a country has been for a long time, the more people are more linear about time because you need to go to work and stamp in. If you're late, you're not getting paid. In a country where the industry has started maybe way later, it had to catch up, right? The culture that you grew up with will shape your personality. If you have to be at work at 8, you're not getting paid. If you're at 8 or 1, you will be on time. And that's what shapes culture. I want to give you now an example that I had with a client last year. I was dealing with this client back then, and they had a very tense conversation. Same company, two different teams, one in Switzerland and one in India. The team in Switzerland was complaining that the team in India was stretching the time after the meeting for 5 or 10 minutes longer after the meeting ended. But the team in India said it was more important to us to find a solution than finishing on time. None of them are wrong. Once again, a matter of perception. In Switzerland, this would be, we end at one, so let's find another meeting next week so we can continue talking. I'm not saying what is right or wrong, but that's what people are used to. So before you judge, just think about the environment that people might be grown up or used to. Now, this is one of my favorite ones. It's called narrative of the future. What it means is, do we have a more short-term or long-term thinking? Before putting the countries in, I would like to give an example. One of the examples is rethinking or recycling. Recycling is a luxury problem. Because if I don't have my daily need met, I'm not thinking about what's going to happen in 50 years. Obviously, you're thinking about one single-use plastic. You're thinking about the beach that my children, I don't have children yet, I'm not thinking about that. But this is just the environment you're in. And here you have countries that are very stable, that think long-term, that have been here for a long time, where there's a political stability, economic stability, so therefore people can think long-term. You have on the left hand countries that might not be as stable because of changes that might happen. And I want to single out one thing. The US is one of the only so-called Western countries that is on the other side. Why is that? Because every 4 years the president can change, and therefore if they are from another party, they can just reverse whatever happened before. And therefore it is a short-term thinking. Let me get it done before things might change once Trump is done. Hopefully soon. And I'm giving you an example here from the US and Japan. If you are thinking about making a presentation to a client that is in the US, you might want to show them what they're going to earn in the next quarter, not what they're going to earn in 5 to 10 years. Because of the short-term thinking, I might not have the foresight of thinking long-term. But if you all deal with a client in Japan, what they would really appreciate is having that foresight of what could happen in the future, because they have the luxury to do so. That would be the example that you could use dealing with other cultures. Now, nurturing trust. This is if trust is built on the left from an institutional or personal point of view. The example I want to give here is the more reliable the legal system is in a country, the least I have to trust you personally. Because otherwise I can just sue you. As easy as that. But in a country where the legal system might not be as reliable, the handshake that I give you is way more important than the contract we sign. And therefore, if I put those countries on a scale, you will be able to see that. For example, if you look at a country like Nigeria, South Korea, or Japan, the legal system might be strong in Japan or South Korea, but it is frowned upon to sue someone. Therefore, I will ask you way more personal questions about your family, your life, because I want to know who you are. Therefore, I'm going to take you for lunch and dinner to get to know you before we talk about business, because I cannot rely on the contract. On the other hand, there are countries where the legal system is super strong. Therefore, once we sign the contract, we can go have a drink and celebrate, and let's get the contract signed. And the example, once again, if we talk about nurturing trust, a team in Belgium travels to Nigeria, and then they organize three get-together, one drink, lunch, and dinner. It's like, what are we not talking about business yet? The people are like, I don't know you. Who are you? I need to get to know you before we do business together. Very important. Encoding communication means if a language is so-called low context or high context. Some of you might have heard that. A low context language is I say what I mean and I mean what I say. It is my responsibility to be understood. American English is one of the most low context language, right? Say what I mean what I say. And the only difference, for example, between German and English, American English in particular, is in German you have du und sie, depending on if you're talking to somebody that you don't know, a formal or informal way to speak to someone. In English, you just have you. But then you have the languages like French, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese. And then on the other hand, you have most Asian and Middle Eastern languages that are high context. High context means when I speak, it's your responsibility to understand me. What I don't say is more important than what I say. Now, give an example. If I were to give you feedback in a company in Japan, and I didn't like your presentation for this week, I will tell you, I really liked last week's presentation. What I mean by that, I didn't like it from this week, but you understood what I meant because we are from the same culture. The important part is, I don't want you to lose face. Therefore, I'm going to say it between the lines, and since we have the same culture, I don't have to say it. But now you might think, if you're from a low context, but we're losing time, why not telling me that? But let me give you an example that might say that. A team in Netherlands and a team in China, they will, for example, give you feedback. They will tell you, I did like this, I did like that, and afterwards we go for lunch. Like, nothing happened. Don't take it personally, right? But here, the team in the Netherlands will think about the team in China when they will deal with each other. They will say, oh, they're not being truthful. They might be hiding something because they're not telling me what they mean. But on the other hand, the team in China might think, why are you stating the obvious? I'm not stupid. Because in my culture, we're not stating the obvious. We are saying it between the lines and you understand. I don't want you to lose face. That same goes for giving feedback, which is the next one. Feedback is very tied to the language. It's kind of the same thing. The only difference is, are you avoiding conflict or not? Right? In a country where conflict is healthy, you can say what you mean and then, okay, it was just business, we move on. But in certain countries that are very indirect and they avoid confrontation, like countries, let's say the Philippines, for example, where you might not be as confrontational, the feedback might be very indirect, right? Because you might hurt somebody's feelings. And don't give feedback in a group session. Do it one-on-one because it might be more important. So, the last one is thriving in uncertainty, which means is a culture, as an example, way more low or high, meaning are this culture used to a lot of changes and being able to adapt if something happens? If you're in a, let's take Germany once again as an example, or most of European countries, you know Christmas is going to be always on the 25th, you can book a flight in 6 months, the trains are mostly on time, even in Germany they're not always on time, but you can plan long term. But once something changes, people might not be used to it, so they don't know how to really adapt to it. I'll give you a very extreme example after putting the countries on the line. You can see the difference here. Once again, thriving in uncertainty is mostly because the country might be very unstable in terms of political reason and etc. But one of my favorite examples is I had a meeting back then when I was working at Red Bull, and it was super. That was when I was in Austria, and then we took the team to Kenya. And then the team wanted, by any means necessary, to send an invite for a meeting in 6 months. And the team in Kenya was like, dude, I don't know what's going to happen in 6 months. For different reasons. They told me, you know what, rainy season is approaching, and normally in the meeting that I'm in, if rainy season hits, I might not be able to go to the office because the roads might be flooded. And if you are, for example, in a Muslim country, just like Eid was yesterday, you don't know when the day of Eid is because it is linked to the moon. I cannot tell you it's going to be on the 23rd or 24th, therefore it can be different. In the culture that you're in, you are sometimes forced to be flexible because things are not as set. So once again, when we're talking about culture, it is always a matter of perception. Control of power, orientation of time, narrative of the future. Nurturing trust, encoding communication, quantitative feedback, and tribing and so. They're just some example of how cultures might be different from each other. Like I said, it's only a matter of perspective. It is not right or wrong. What I wanted to give you today in this 25 minutes that we had was just an understanding why people might think or act differently than you do. Because they grew up in an environment might be different than yours. It's not right, it's not wrong, it is just different. And that was my time. Thank you very much. Questions, happy to do that. Sorry, we had a question there, yes.
Hi. Yes, awesome presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
I was wondering, do you think discussion of these cultural dimensions is enough to kind of help solve some of the problems that could come about from them? Or do you think that you have to like take other steps to maybe you have multicultural teams or work groups? What do you kind of do?
Okay, so in an environment, I work a lot with international companies that have like teams all across Europe. Like talking about it is the first step. But from a human point of view, it is important to exchange with a colleague that might be from a different environment. Because if you hear it in theory, that sounds weird. But just like the example we did right now. If you, for example, I'm choosing as an example because of the captain, if she would, you have a relationship at work away, the person that you know and trust, and she will show you something that you never thought about before that might be raising an awareness. Showing that she's counting like this might be surprising to you and might bring you to willing to see that things are different. This is just the first step. But on a bigger scale, it is important to not come with a certain level of ignorance, might be the wrong word. I would say arrogance. And that's what I'm facing a lot, and I'm saying that. A lot of companies are arrogant and think that the way they're doing things is the only right way. And they will fall on their faces when they get there. Unfortunately, teams come to me once they failed. They're like, please help us. It would have been better. They're not getting more expensive once they fail. So, but it would be better. So having teams that are intercultural is important, but it is important to let them exchange on a human level to have those things and then take it further afterwards. That would be my recommendation.
Thank you. Awesome.
If you're from a more Western style
society,
you're used to giving direct feedback.
Yeah.
Dealing with a less direct culture.
Yeah.
How do you know your criticism or feedback has landed?
Yeah.
I've tried it.
It's a tricky one because how can you still give the feedback that you need without being lost in translation? So the first step is, once you introduce yourself to a new culture, having this is important for them to understand it, to think differently, and you as well to make a step towards it. First is putting everything on the table, showing them the way I'm doing things is this, the way you might do things is this. How can we meet in the middle and have a conversation? For example, you can still give a direct feedback, but one step would be not to do it in a group environment like you might do. For example, in a presentation, you have a team sitting and say, oh, I didn't like that slide, can you please change the color? You might do it one-on-one afterwards, where you could still be direct without the person feeling like they're being put down in front of others. Because depending, like I said, growing up in Germany, where I started to work, people used to tell me, if you don't get feedback, that's good feedback. Which is a horrible way to think about it, but that's how I grew up, literally. And if they give me hard feedback, they were like, just take it, let's go for lunch afterwards, because that's just business, you know? But like having that first step of like acknowledging that you're different and not going head first and thinking the way we do it is the right one, especially if you're coming from another culture. And then step by step, doing it on a one-on-one and building the trust with those people. Because when you're coming from outside and you're still the outsider, and that's unfortunately the truth, you need to make a step towards them before them getting to you. That would be my recommendation.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for the incredible Abraham Rivas.
I hope you guys oversold him at all. I think I oversold him at all. I think I undersold him. What an amazing, valuable perspective.